very few of us know them. They took an oath to protect us at home and abroad, so the rest of us can live safe and free. They are the men and women of our military and first responder communities, and these are their stories. American Warrior Radio is on the air.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to American Warrior Radio. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. Today, we're very lucky to have a very, very busy man joining us here on American Warrior Radio. Is the commander of the 355th Wing at Davis-Monthan Air Force Base. He's responsible for organizing, training, and equipping a wing comprised of 25 squadrons. He's got 46,000 personnel out there and $51 billion in assets. Colonel Scott Mills is a command pilot with more than 2,400 flying hours, 300 of them in combat. He's a graduate of the U.S. Air Force Academy with no less than 3 master's degrees. Scott, welcome to American Warrior Radio.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me here today.
That's pretty impressive. You just like school?
I do like school. In fact, from a very young age, I have always loved going to school. I've always loved reading. I've always loved sitting down and discussing new ideas with folks across the board.
I've always been impressed with particularly the leadership in our military. And I think that that's one of the missions of this radio show, Scott, is to educate those civilians out there. And a lot of them don't realize just honestly how well educated many of you are. And that's part of being a good warrior.
It is. And we take education across the board very seriously in the military. And from every single different career field, we look at when is the best time to educate and what is the way we want to educate you. And then lastly, what are the things we want you to know about? We talk a lot about leadership. We talk a lot about technical skill. We talk a lot about growth and expansion and in terms of new ideas, new areas across the board. And we delve into every subject that we can because at the end of the day, like you said, we want our folks to be educated in a large variety of topics.
Well, let's start off by edumacating me.
Copy.
I don't know. There's the tradition in the fighter pilot community and the pilot community to give someone a call sign. How did you become Manuel? Wait, now, well, let me stop. Is it a family-friendly story?
It is a family-friendly
okay,
story,
right,
in fact.
Ahead,
actually, it's a fun learning story, too, because the name itself, it depends on when you knew me. Some folks would call me Manuel. Other folks would say Manuel, depending on what time you knew me as a pilot. But it's really a twofold story. The first is, unfortunately, a math joke. So the way that we aim, the way that you aim a gun, the way that you aim artillery, the way that you aim anything is using something called stadiometric ranging. So stadiometric ranging means that the size of that pipper or that front sight, while it looks very small, at a greater distance is actually a very large distance, or it could be, and it helps you aim and helps you sight a weapon. So we aim, as does the Army when they're using artillery, using mils. Now a mil is actually a milliradian, which is a breakdown of a degree. So there are a certain number of mils in a degree. So when we tell someone to aim, it would be too much to say aim 1 degree left, 1 degree right. That would be such a large correction over time, and the corrections we need to make are extremely small. So when we say corrections, we say add aim 1 mil left, aim 1 mil right. And so in the A-10 community, when we are not using our computed deliveries, we're doing manual mils. Or when we're creating the deliveries themselves, we're cranking manual mils. So that is part of it based on my last name. The second part is that on my first ever, we'll call it a non-grade sheet ride, the first ride ever as a pilot in the military that I'm not being evaluated on, that I'm not being graded, and realize that is a 3-year long progression. It's a year of pilot training. It's another year of introduction to fighter fundamentals, and then it's another 6 to 9 months of A-10 specific training. And then you show up at your first combat squadron, and you go through their upgrade as well. So we're well down the path in terms of being a pilot. I feel very experienced at this point, but it is the very first time ever that I'm not being graded, not being evaluated. And I'm carrying, for the first time also, an AGM-65 Maverick missile, as well as 14 high-explosive rockets. And it comes time to shoot the 14 high-explosive rockets, and we've set up to where I'm going to shoot all 14 with one button push.
You're going to salvo them.
I'm going to salvo all 14 at once.
Cool.
It would have been really cool. I used the wrong manual sight. We discussed it prior to the flight. Like everything we do in the Air Force, we do an extensive job of briefing what we're going to do, and the briefing consisted of a very experienced instructor looking at me saying, "Are you familiar with manual rockets?" And I said, absolutely not. No, I'm not. He said, oh, it's easy. You set this mill setting. You aim for 6,000 feet. 9,000 feet is the pipper. 12,000 feet is the bottom of the reticle. That only works if you use the right reticle. When you use the wrong reticle, all 14 of those rockets go much, much further than you intended and draw a line that was miles long, stretching probably almost the entire width of the impact range that we had. So it was the immediate call from the instructor was, hey, those looked like they went a little bit long, and my from my standpoint as well, I thought they were a little bit long, so clearly it was the machine's fault. There was something wrong with the sight. So I immediately said, yeah, I'm not sure. I nailed the aiming. Not sure what went wrong. And it wasn't until we got back to the debrief when he called up the footage from his own shot that I realized my mistake. And he looked at me and said, do you know what you did wrong? And I kind of hung my head and said, yes, I do. And, of course, they watched the film, and as soon as they called it up, it was very obvious what I had done wrong.
Now, this was on what was your rank at the time?
I was a first lieutenant at the time.
Oh, boy. So, yeah, welcome to the community.
It was a good welcome to the community. Now, as far as bad stories goes, things, mistakes that you can make, that's on the lower end of things.
Right.
Everybody was able to walk away, so it wasn't that terrible, but it stuck, obviously.
Well, that's why you practice. Better
yes,
to make
is.
The mistakes in practice than in combat.
Yes,
now,
it is.
Your 300 or so combat hours, those were all in the A-10?
They were.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then when you were flying F-35s, was that just training?
It
training
was.
Other pilots?
I flew both in a test organization, the Air Force Operational Test and Evaluation Center, which looks at large-scale tests for the Air Force. We were looking at some of the big changes coming out for the F-35. And I also flew as an F-35 aggressor. So, you know, the aggressor force across the Air Force, they are the force that is designed to test our Blue Air Force. So our Blue pilots from every different combat set, every different combat system that we have, they go out to various ranges and train. They train really hard against both surface-to-air systems and air-to-air systems as well, designed to prevent them access or prevent them from accomplishing what they want to. We, as the aggressor force, we put up a myriad of forces in the air and on the ground designed to simulate real-world assets across the world, real-world adversary-type systems. And now the F-35 represented a large step forward so that we could start showing systems that will be coming out soon, systems that exist even today. So we took the F-35, reduced its combat capability, and then employed against Blue Air and showed them what it's like to go up against a fifth-gen adversary.
That's and does anybody have anything close?
They do. The Chinese have a J-20 that is a fifth-gen fighter. And again, when we take our own F-35, we reduce its capabilities and we can employ something that like what they would see if our Blue Air pilots were to go against that J-20.
But the F-35 is still a better aircraft.
Let's
hope we never have to find out, maybe, right?
Right. It's not a stretch to say that the F-35 is a technological marvel. It is simply amazing the things that it can do. And we talk often about the differences between the A-10 and the F-35. And the way the data is presented to the pilot, very, very similar in both aircraft. Now, the difference is the A-10 receives that through various different tactical data links, electronic ways of sharing information on threat systems, on who is where, and all the different things that are going on across the battle space. The A-10 receives that. The F-35 generates that on its own. So the F-35, I had an opportunity to meet a Tuskegee Airman that had flown in the Korean War recently. And I was walking him around the F-35, and he was describing to me what it was like to take off in Korea and just scouring the skies, looking around, trying to find enemy fighters, and constantly feeling on edge, always looking behind him. And I casually asked, what would it have felt like to take off and immediately see everyone, know where everyone is? And that was you could tell that was something he had never thought of. And I thought, well, that's the system our pilots are training with today in the F-35. They take off and they're given awareness on a lot of things that are going on.
Yeah, we just had a historical writer on the show, and we were talking about, you know, Curtis LeMay was the focus of his book. And you know, you talk about those guys who went from not quite Wright brothers, but certainly Lindbergh, to space shuttles.
That's right.
And
that's, right.
That's a pretty amazing leap. Scott, I tell you, the reason we can maybe I get to nerd out a little bit more later on the show, but part of the reason I really wanted you on was I heard you make a presentation recently where you talked about your your philosophy, I guess would be the word, on commanding your troops and how you treat them and how you want them to fight wars. So when we come back, I'd like to get into your six words.
Absolutely.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Ben Bueller-Garcia, talking with Colonel Scott Mills. He's the commander of the 355th Wing. We'll be right back. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Bueller-Garcia. We're talking with Colonel Scott Mills. Scott is the commander of the 355th Wing, which happens to be based at Davis-Monthan Air Force Base in Tucson. Call sign, Manuel.
That's right.
If you just tuned in, go back and listen to the podcast. You'll get that joke. Scott, I was fortunate enough when you just arrived to be part of a briefing that you provided to some of the community folks, and I was very impressed. You basically outlined your philosophy of command and support and training for all of your airmen in one sheet. Now, usually with the military, it's death by PowerPoint. But this, and as I'm listening to you walk through this, in my mind, I'm thinking, you know, these are things that can and should be applied by business leaders as well and their organizations. And then even in within our own families, our own sports teams, these are just wonderful philosophies that will lead to a stronger team, a better product, better prosecution of whatever your mission is in life or the company mission is. So if you don't mind, I'd love you to kind of share those with the folks. And I've teased you about, you know, in effect, in a lot of parts of the country, 46,000 people, I mean, that's a city. You're the mayor of a city with a huge budget, $51 billion, or huge assets. But nonetheless, it's management is key. So let me just turn you loose and...
Well, it's important, number one, that and you talk about how the, and there's six words that I'll come back to, and I'll say them now just because I'll repeat them ad nauseum, and I've told the airmen across the installation, Davis-Monthan, that my hope is that they start hearing these words so often that they know I'm going to say them before I stand up, and I divide them into two sets of three because that's the way our brains work. I say respected, connected, protected, fight, fit, family. And as you said, it's not just applicable in the military. It can be applicable almost in any environment because it's all about, number one, setting a culture, and number two, setting expectations. To start with, I'll tell you the story of sort of the why behind it, and it's my own personal why. It's why I do what I do. When folks ask me why I made a certain decision or why I'm taking the installation in a certain direction, this is what I bring it back to. And it starts with the question of, are you ready? I ask our airmen all the time, are you ready? And if their answer is for what or how or why, that's a no. Are you ready should simply be the answer of yes. Yes, I'm ready. And it doesn't matter what we're talking about. The fact is that we need to be ready. And it comes from a story of mine in January of 2007. I was flying in Iraq, and I was flying in an A-10. I was performing a strafing run with an AV-8 south of Baghdad when we got a call of a downed helicopter, a downed UH-60. The UH-60 had been traveling east to west north of Baghdad, and normally when we get a call for a downed aircraft, we train so much to focus on the finding. We have to find the downed aircraft or the isolated personnel because that's the only way we can protect them and find and get them back. We trained so much to that, but on this day it took me all of about 3 seconds to find them. As soon as we got the call included a direction. So this is about 10 miles north of Baghdad. And I spent the first 2 seconds just orienting myself. And that involved just looking down at the internal compass that I had inside the A-10 and realizing which way was north. And as soon as I recognized it was to my right, I looked out the right-hand side of the aircraft, and I could immediately see the location of the downed helicopter. It was a single helicopter in the middle of a very wide open field, streaming smoke out of both the engine and other components of the aircraft. Now, seeing that in and of itself, there was a part of me that thought, great, hard part's over. I've found the people that I need to protect. Completely wrong, obviously. That was not the hard part. Now, as we got closer, I knew at that point during this time in 2007, we'd started to see what we called like a complex ambush. The complex ambush was all about downing a helicopter or downing an aircraft. And once it was on the ground, then engaging it from surface-to-surface type fires, heavy machine gun, Rockford Pell grenades, anything to put maximum amount of casualties onto the ground there. And so I knew that more than likely that was the case here. The way they had downed that helicopter, the propensity of those attacks that we had seen recently, I knew that more than likely there was a site waiting to engage that asset. So it became just absolutely critical that we get overhead and we start looking for those. And we were 100% right. There were sites there, but I didn't see them. Now, to the untrained eye, these sites had been camouflaged. These sites had been covered in certain ways to prevent people from seeing them. But my eyes were not untrained. My eyes had been trained for this for years. Specifically, even in the run-up to this deployment for our unit, we had talked about it. We had trained to it. We had looked for things on the ground, trying to find when things were being camouflaged or obscured. So my eyes were not untrained. But for 5 minutes, I scoured the countryside. I looked for anything that would indicate the presence of an enemy position. And again, they were there. I missed them. I know that it was 5 minutes because at 5 minutes and 1 second, three different sites around the helicopter opened up with heavy machine gun fire directly into the aircraft. And I think about that 5 minutes all the time. I don't think of it in a sense of what I should have done or a sense of guilt. I think about it like a debt that I have to pay forward, a debt that means that when someone else's 5 minutes are coming, and what I tell the airmen across the Air Force actually is, your 5 minutes are coming. And whether or not you're ready for them, that's the only question. And so when I ask our airmen, when I tell them, hey, remember, your 5 minutes are coming, and then those 5 minutes, it's not good enough to be good enough. You have to be great. You have to be amazing when those 5 minutes find you. And I remind them of that all the time. When I ask them, are you ready? I remind them, you've got 5 minutes. 5 minutes are coming. You need to be ready when that time comes. And that should drive everything they do, from the way that they take care of themselves, the way that they study, the way that they train, the way that they prepare. Everything that they do needs to be focused on that 5 minutes. So I oftentimes open up these conversations by asking, are you ready? The next part, the six words, the way to break them up, the respected, connected, protected, I talk about in a sense of culture. I believe that as a leader, or as anyone, we have a responsibility to set a baseline, set a culture, set the floor, and say there is nothing below this. You will meet this minimum. And then on top of that, I look to the individual units, the individual people, to build their own cultures. Maybe that's a culture within a family. Maybe that's a culture within a squadron, a group, or even a wing. But my responsibility is to tell them what is the absolute minimum. And that's where respected, connected, protected comes in.
Let me interrupt for a second, if you don't mind. I'm trying to, again, wrap my mind around this. You went to the Air Force Academy, so pretty much your entire life, certainly your entire adult life, has been in the military.
It has. In fact, my entire life. My dad was was also in the military. He was a C-130 and EC-130 pilot for 30 years. So I've grown up and known nothing else but the Air Force.
So the difference about what you do, and I'm guessing, Scott, that this is not, you don't want it to apply, nor should it apply just to fighter pilots or just to pararescuemen. I mean, if I'm a mechanic, my 5 minutes is going to come.
Absolutely.
In fact, maybe in life you get your 5 minutes more than once.
That's right.
And you need to be ready all the time. Yeah. And in my line of work, you know, things might get a little sketchy at a city council meeting about a rezoning or something, but nobody's going to lose their life. But the stakes in your line of work are pretty damn high.
They are. And that applies to every different career field that we have. Even though if you look across Davis-Monthan and you see our folks, we have folks that they're a part of this entire fight. They're a part of the wing and the installation, and they each have their 5 minutes coming. It doesn't matter if they're on the staff at 12th Air Force or Air Force's Southern, which is a tenant unit at Davis-Monthan. They every day influence policies, procedures that we do for the betterment of South America and all of our policies and allies and partners there. All the way, you mentioned our maintainers. Those maintainers every single day have such high expectations and requirements that they have to meet. So absolutely, their 5 minutes are coming, and for some of those, a lot more often than others. We have folks in our medical career field who face that 5 minutes a lot. Folks who are asked, again, that within that 5 minutes, being good enough isn't good enough. You've got to be great when that 5 minutes comes. And the problem with those 5 minutes is you can't predict them. You don't know if it's happening today. You don't know if it's happening tomorrow. And it drives me a lot just in terms of, as I'll talk about with some of the words, but how I take care of myself, how I try to mentally recharge, and how I encourage our airmen to do that as well.
Yeah, I don't know if you know this, but one of the pararescuemen on the famous Marcus Luttrell Lone Survivor Rescue was a PJ out of Davis Mountain there in Tucson. And you may not know this, though, he also was on the staff at the University Medical Center when Congresswoman Giffords there was an assassination attempt on her life.
I did not.
And both he and the other doctor in the emergency room that night were both combat veterans. And I've often heard him say that that probably led to a better outcome because you're just... Civilians don't normally see that kind of a mass casualty shooting event, but having two combat veterans there who were ready when their second 5 minutes came was very important. But when we come back, let's get into those six words, and I definitely want to start off about respecting. You talk about my day job. Respect is not something we see a lot of in job, so maybe you'll teach some folks some lessons. Ladies and gentlemen, it's your host, Ben Bueller Garcia, Colonel Scott Mills. We'll be right back. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. This is Ben Bueller Garcia. We're chatting with Colonel Scott Mills. Colonel Mills is currently the commander of the 355th Wing at Davis-Monthan Air Force Base in Tucson, Arizona. Scott, we're about to talk about your six words, and I think you always start off with respected. Every role, every person, every time. Explain to us what that means and why all of us should be doing that every day of our lives.
Well, it should be easy. You say respected, and you think to yourself that we as human beings should treat each other with a measure of respect at all times. And however, if it were that easy, I wouldn't have it as the first word. If it were commonplace, I wouldn't stress it every time that I have that conversation about the culture that we have to set. So I always start out by saying respected. Now, in the military, we have a little bit of a tide to push against here, a little bit of an uphill battle, because we have rank and we have position. And sometimes people get confused about what those things are for and what they mean with respect to using respect. If the commander of Tilt Air Force, who's a phenomenal guy, Major General Pettis, were to walk into the radio show, I would stop. I'd say, sir. I would stand when I addressed him. That is a military custom and courtesy. We do that based upon a chain of command that allows us to balance risk across the force. And we have to risk lives, and we have to risk mission accomplishment. It has nothing to do with respect. The purpose of rank and the purpose of position is to serve. That is it. It should not affect the amount of respect you show someone. So what I continually have to remind folks is that from our youngest to our oldest or most senior, the level of respect should be exactly the same across the board. It's every person, no matter their role, and it's every time. It doesn't matter if you're having a bad day or a good day. You show that person the same level of respect you would show anyone else. And like I said, if it were commonplace, if it were all the time, I probably wouldn't include it. I wouldn't have to say it every single time, but I do because it's important. And I think it sets that baseline of this is the way we're going to treat each other. I should not be treated differently because of my position on the base. I should be treated the same as our brand new airmen who are just arriving here or just arriving to any installation. We should be treated the same. That goes hand in hand, actually, with protected. Protected, I believe, again, should be easy. When I say protected, what I mean is somebody should be able to show up to their workspace and be the absolute best they can be, meaning everybody gets a fair swing. Everybody gets to be the best that they're able to be. The types of policies that make workplaces or types of policies and behavior that make workplaces not meet that goal, sexually discriminatory policies, racially discriminatory policies or actions, those are the types of things that we talk about and we know about and we try to deal those. We both know that's not the only ones that are out there. What I tell folks is none of them have a place here. None of them that prevent someone from not being themselves and not being the absolute best they can be at their job, none of those have a place here. And again, that's the bare minimum. That's the floor.
Do you feel that you talked about the rank structure as a disadvantage in some ways, maybe unless I misinterpreted
no.
that. But in this case, is that bring an advantage? Because you can take action right then and there, bang, bang, whereas I would have to get a lawyer and call in human resources. And
You would think that the way the military is structured, that based on my position, I could provide these three words, provide this baseline, and then it instantly happens. But the reality is that the the action, the ability to make things happen, they reside with every single person within that, on that installation, in that organization, whatever realm you're talking about. It requires action on everyone's part. So what I do is simply define it as, this is our floor, but to create that floor, to actually make that a reality, I rely on every single person in the organization. I have to have them stand up and say, I am not. And you fill in one of those two words. You say, I'm not respected. I'm not protected here. And that action they have to take, knowing and trusting in their leadership, in me, that is not going to fly. And what I tell folks is, if you want to get my laser-like attention, you tell me I am not one of those two things. And suddenly, I'm not doing anything else that day. We're going to focus on why that is, and we're going to make that right. We're going to make sure that we as an organization are standing on that firm ground, that floor exists.
And it needs to flow both ways in the organization.
100%. Absolutely.
Top to bottom and bottom to top.
That's right.
Interesting. Okay.
And actually, that description of top to bottom, bottom to top, it flows very well into the last word, is connected. You know, when we talk about being connected, some folks, you talk to them and they think of a job as a job. I'm here to move my paperwork from the left side of my desk to the right side of my desk. That cannot go in any sort of organization where you want people to feel vested. You want people to feel invested in what you're doing and what you're trying to accomplish. They have to feel connected to each other, to the people they're working with, to that entire unit, to me as a person, not me as the commander, not me as a colonel. They need to feel connected to me. And we try to do that by letting them hear my voice, by trying to be in and around them, to talk to them so that they know what I'm going to say before I say it. They know every chance I get, they're going to hear me say respected, connected, protected. They're going to hear me run through those words. And I want them to feel that connection. And we think about our airmen who are hurting. We just finished up. September is Suicide Awareness Month. You know, when people feel disconnected, that's when they get to that spot where they feel like life is too much. They feel like they're being weighed down. But if they feel connected, if we can plug them back in, if we can show them that they matter, that they're a part of this unit, they're a part of this team, they're a part of this mission, that connected feeling can show them how important they are.
I was recently out there and we're doing a feeds, not the breath. We're feeding the young airmen at the chapel there in the dorms. I guess we can't call them barracks anymore. The dorms.
They're dorms.
I just showed my age there. But there's a young man who clearly was not from around here. And he went way out of his way to say he was not just from Alabama, but he was from Southern Alabama. Apparently that's an important distinction. And this, what a hoot he was, but this was his first time in the big city. I get the impression, Scott, this was his first time anywhere. And there was sort of, you could see there's sort of a balance of excitement about his life, but still a lot of trepidation. And I guess the reason I gravitated towards him, and I don't know if it was his accent or what it was, but the other airmen weren't completely avoiding him, but he was clearly sticking out a little bit. And at least in my mind, it's like, that's the young man I'm going to worry about. Because he's got this whole life ahead of him and great opportunity. But in today's world, you almost get the sense that, you know, maybe when you're the boss, you can tell me, but, you know, an airman goes and does their job and then goes back to their dorm and plays video games and you know, maybe hits the fast food place or gets takeout, and they're not interacting at all anymore.
That's right.
Not like they used to.
That's right. I'll tell you, my first reaction when I hear someone's from Southern Alabama is usually tell them, go Dogs. But
okay.
The second part of that is whenever I say respected, connected, protected, I never say it's going to be easy. And I had a young lieutenant yesterday ask me, how do I get connected with our young people? And if you think about any organization, no matter how large, how do I make someone connected when maybe they don't want to be, or maybe it's not in their normal flow? Maybe they're an introvert. You know, that's me myself. I gain energy on my own, and sometimes those times are required for me to maintain my mental stability and my own mental health. But how do I reach out and connect? And the first step is saying, I never said it was going to be easy. I never said that this was going to happen overnight, that you could simply exist, that you could tell people, hey, I want you to be connected, and then that they would. It takes overt, sometimes drastic action. And when I talked about those airmen or anyone in the community that's hurting, that needs someone, the onus is not on them to ask for help. The onus is on us to reach out, to make sure they know that we're there. So when you ask about specifically somebody who does their job, 9 to 5, goes home, remains shut off, I think it is incumbent upon the person they sit next to. I think it is incumbent upon their first line supervisor. ultimately all the way up to whatever that equivalency is, their wing commander, their CEO, the person who runs that entire component of the business, they all have a part to play in bringing that person into the fold, bringing them into the connection, whether it's through silly things like, hey, how do you have lunch? How do you start the day? How do you end the day? How do you have those touch points with that person? A commonplace thing that people say in the military is that as a squadron commander, best job in the world, because you're closest to the airmen. You're close to them every day. My pushback to that is your distance to the airmen, that is your choice. It just becomes more difficult, the different rank or the different position that you have. It doesn't remove the responsibility, though. You look at the senior leaders across our military, they all take very specific action to decrease that distance, to be next to those airmen, to engage with those airmen, to hear what those airmen have to say, to connect with them. I think what we're looking at, when I break it down to them and I show them what our senior leaders are doing, what I said to that lieutenant yesterday is, number one, it's going to be difficult. It's going to take a lot of work on your end, but that's your job. Your job is to make sure that they know they're connected. And while I can't give you all the good ideas, I can't tell you exactly how to do it, what I can tell you is, at the end of the day, that is your responsibility.
Well, like any organization, although in your case, well, I don't know if it'd be more high profile, but the breakdowns, I would guess, are more likely. I mean, as you gain responsibility and experience, you become a better airman or a Marine or a sailor or a soldier or a coastie or whatever it is. So one would think that both the opportunity for a mistake to be made, but also the opportunity for growth is much greater with the younger airmen. So I'm a right out of tech school. I'm not going to go up and knock on the colonel's door, but I don't have to, right? I mean, you want it so that whatever that next step in the organization is, they can talk to them or the one above them or the one above them. They don't have to necessarily come to Colonel Mills.
They don't have to, but I like the idea that they don't feel like they can't. I met one of our youngest airmen, Airman Dauphin, who just recently arrived here from tech school. She's from Tulsa, Oklahoma. Phenomenal airman, and I can't wait to see her grow in the Air Force. But I sat and took time with her because I wanted her to know that when she saw me at any time, that she had the opportunity to come up and talk to me, even if that was to tell me something that was wrong. Hey, something that's going on with the dorms, an issue they're having, anything like that. I want them to have all of those points of access. We do something called Coffee with the Commander. Every Thursday at 7 o'clock, I go have coffee at a specific place on base. And I do so because I want people to have that opportunity to come talk to me if they want to. I do see it as I want them to trust the people that they work with every day. I want them to trust the people they sit next to, maybe those people that live next to them in the dorms. But if they get into a situation where that doesn't appeal to them or that doesn't provide them the access or the action that they want, they need to have alternative means as well. I need them to know that... Again, my rank and position, the only reason that exists is to serve, and it's to serve them. So when they turn around and say, I'm just an airman, I tell them, please don't ever say you're just. You tell me, we are two humans, we're going to do respected, connected, protected, and if whatever you need to feel that connection, that's what I'm going to do.
Scott, when we come back, I want to talk about fight, fit, and family, also three, four very important words. This is good stuff. I wish we had more time.
Thanks, sir.
Ladies and gentlemen, Ben Buehler-Garcia talking with Colonel Scott Mills. We'll be right back. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Buehler-Garcia. We're talking with Colonel Scott Mills. Scott Mills has a roadmap, I guess, on how he treats people and how he wants people to be treated. And, Scott, we're talking about your six words. We've reviewed, respected, protected, and connected before the break, and now you've got three more you'd like to share with folks.
I do. If respected, protected, connected sets the baseline of culture, it sets really what I tell people is that's their expectations of me, that I'll set that culture so that is what people can see and live in every day. Fight, fit, family is my expectations of them every single day. Fight, fit, family, and it's not a stretch to say that I think of these three things every single day. You know, I have two mottos in life, two mottos that I try to live by, but the first one is just fight. And when I say fight, I'm not describing fisticuffs, I'm not describing an altercation. What I mean is the mentality that when you wake up every day, you wake up and you move forward with a purpose, that you know what you're doing that day, that I know what I'm going to try to be. If that 5 minutes arrives, then I'm ready. Maybe I'm not ready at 100%, maybe I'm only ready at 50% that day, but I'm ready for that 50%. I'm willing to give that 50% in that fight. There's really two types of people two types of people who don't want to fight. You've got one type of person who doesn't know how. And what I tell them is, we are surrounded, both in the military and across the board, and you know, no matter what community you're coming from, you're surrounded by people that'll teach you, people that'll show you. As long as you have the courage to stand up and say, I don't know how to do this, then we'll teach you how to do it better, how to fight better. The other type of people who will tell me, I don't want to. I don't want to fight. The people who want to treat their role like a job, not a mission, not a passion, not something they're driving to get done. They want to move that paper from the left side of their desk to the right side of the desk. And what I tell folks, at least in my organization, is they just don't have a place here. I don't have the time. I don't have the mental depth to provide that for them. I need people to show up and want to fight. And again, that comes down to, although it's one of the six words, this is the expectation every day. Pick the thing that you're doing that day. What is your fight? What is your main effort? That today, for me, is this. Making sure that in these few minutes that I'm not good enough, that I try to be as the absolute best that I can. This is my fight today. And what I tell people to remind them is, you've got to do that every day. And they tell me, well, what if I'm tired? What if I've only got that 50% to give to you? I tell them, I want that 50%. They said, no. What if I'm really tired? I've only got 10% that day. I tell them, I want that 10%. I want you to give me everything you have that day. But sometimes we get knocked down. Sometimes those days are long. Sometimes we don't succeed. And I tell people, I don't win every fight I have. In fact, I wish I would win 50%, but I don't. That's where fit and family come in. Fit and family are the pillars that enable someone to fight every day. So I tell them that while the fight is my expectation of you every day, you can't do that without the fit and the family. When I say fit, especially in a military organization, people often imagine a military obstacle course. They imagine someone doing pull-ups, and they imagine someone running. That's not what I mean by fit. Each of the services have their own standards in terms of what is the requirement for physical fitness, so I sort of let the service standards take care of that. When I say fit, what I mean is internally. How are they doing? How are you doing inside? How are you recharging every day? I tell them that you as a person, we all have ways that we recharge every day. I can go out and I can fight really hard, but if I don't try to recharge, I'll come back the next day and fight again, but I won't have recharged and I won't be able to fight as good as I could have. I used to do that. I used to drive myself, push myself, not give myself the time needed to recharge. And what I remind folks and what I saw as a person is that road has an end, and it's usually a brick wall. And it's tough to get through and it's tough to recover from, but you need that time. I mentioned earlier that I'm an introvert as a person, and that means that when I give energy, that's usually in any sort of interaction, anything where I've got to be projecting, I'm giving that energy out, I have to have the time to recharge. I used to use my commute time. I had about a 30-minute drive to and from work. I would listen to a book. I would try to learn another language. I would do things that allowed my internal health to reconstitute a little bit. What I tell folks is, number one, I care that you know what that is for you. And you'd be amazed how many people don't. They don't know what that is. How did I recharge? How do I as a person do that? And the second thing I care about is that they have access to it. Because I'll say this a couple of times, but COVID did a lot of things. Sometimes it removed people's access to the things that allowed them to recharge as a person. And the last thing I remind people of is family. You know, when I say family, everyone in the audience, no matter where they are, different people, different types of people pop into their brain. That could be somebody that they live with. It could be somebody that they work with. It could be somebody who lives near them or somebody who doesn't even live in the same country. But there's a person that they can turn to when they need to take a knee, when they need to slow things down and say, I need a chance just to slow down, to put my head down, to take a knee. What I tell our folks and anybody in an organization is I care that you have it, and I care that you have access to it. Again, COVID did a lot of terrible things. It strained those relationships. It strained those connections. And what I want to make sure, and again, the Fight Fit family, these are my expectations of someone every single day. This isn't a weekly or a monthly or even an annual check-in. This is every single day. You have to fight. You have to show up knowing what you're fighting for, who you're fighting for, what you're trying to accomplish. You have to take the time for yourself, and you've got to take the time to remember who your family is and give them that time as well.
Scott, I'm guessing this is your latest base, but it's not going to be your last base. And our signals reach markets that have got 43 military installations in them. And my mission today was that for the civilians in those markets to hear these words as well and to step up. To join in your mission, to support. And again, in this case, we're talking about airmen, but they may be sailors in their community, they may be Marines, they may be soldiers, they may be Coasties, or what do we call the space folks now?
Guardians.
Guardians, okay, they may be guardians. But all of us can do something. Not all of us wore the uniform, but all of us can support. So what in you know, 30 seconds, what would you tell those civilians out there or those business organizations about what they can do? Can they just, you know, go down and, if they don't have a relationship with the base yet, just go down and knock on the front gate?
always a careful knock. What I would remind everyone is that service is not limited to wearing a uniform. That I think that we, by virtue of living in this country, we are all called to serve in certain ways. The folks that are in the military, those are folks who have chosen to serve by putting a uniform on. But there are so many different ways that everyone can serve. And you know, it's always appreciated. People will tell you thank you for your service, and that is always so appreciated. But I would love to turn around and tell that to them as well. Thank you for your service. Thank you for the things you're doing. Ben, for you, thank you for what you're doing to send these messages out to remind people how important it is that we do serve. And that is the unifying thing about our nation, is that I think we all have a part in this game. We all have some skin in the game, and we all need to serve. We all need to find the way that we can serve. And there's thousands and thousands of different ways to do that, thousands of different organizations that need our help, that need our time and energy.
Well, Scott, I appreciate your time and sharing your messages with our American Warrior Radio listeners today.
Thank you, sir.
Ladies and gentlemen, you can find this podcast and over 500 others at AmericanWarriorRadio.com. Until next time, all policies and procedures remain in place.
Listening to American Warrior Radio. You can hear over 300 episodes of this program via AmericanWarriorRadio.com or the most recent episodes via your favorite podcast app.